Good morning, everybody, and welcome to The Public File. My name is Kat Modrew. My guest for this part of The Public File, Amber Stott, the CEO and Chief Food Genius at the Food Literacy Center. How are you, my dear?
I am well. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you have a great organization, and every time I have you on, I'm hoping that new ears hear about you for the first time, because it really is a fantastic organization, very unique, and serves a very important population and community. So for those people who maybe haven't heard about what you do, talk about the Food Literacy Center, how, when, and why it was created.
Yeah, our mission is very simple. It's to inspire kids to eat their vegetables. And we are doing this as a form of prevention. And I think prevention is a lot easier for folks to understand during these times. We know that 40% of kids in Sacramento suffer from childhood obesity. One in three kids in America has type 2 diabetes. And these chronic diseases are preventable, just like we're all staying home to try to prevent ourselves from passing along COVID. We're trying to get kids to eat their vegetables so they never get these chronic diseases in the first place, because they tend to be in higher concentrations in low-income and Black and brown communities. And then, of course, when you are sick, think about the financial burden, the loss of work, the loss of being able to get to school. So these problems can compound. And if by eating fruits and vegetables and staying healthy, we can prevent all of this from ever happening in the first place, that's what we want, because we want a really healthy and happy future for these kids.
So there are people saying, well, why do certain communities not have access to fruits and vegetables? Because for many people, it's just a given. You go into a store and there's the produce section.
Yeah. A lot of the families that we're serving live in South Sacramento, and many of those zip codes have been declared by the USDA as something called a food desert, meaning that they don't have the same access that the rest of the zip codes have to fresh fruits and vegetables. And so if you are, you know, not able to, say you don't have a car and you're reliant on a bus and you can't get to that grocery store with those great fruits and vegetables in one bus ride or even two, that becomes problematic, and you're going to buy what's closer to home. And oftentimes that tends to be packaged foods, you know, things like, you know, soup in a cup and that kind of stuff.
And along those same lines, I found this very interesting when we've talked in the past. Why do low-income kids tend to have a less broad knowledge of different types of produce? It kind of dovetails off of what we just talked about. But people with low incomes are going to buy what kids are going to eat?
Yeah, it's so you take this family in a food desert, and then also they don't have a lot of money. And so they are, you know, on a fixed income, and when they go to buy groceries, they want to buy something they know for certain is going to be consumed, because they can't waste any of those dollars. And so they're going to buy things that they know their kids are familiar with, like maybe a banana and an apple. And they're not going to risk buying the kale or the, you know, something weird, even like a persimmon that they've never seen before, because they just can't afford to do what a lot of more wealthy families would do, which is, I'm going to buy these three things and see what my kid likes. And if they don't like it, you know, it was only a few dollars wasted. And so we actually take that on for these families by buying a range of different fruits and vegetables and introducing them to the kids in our program. And then, of course, we teach the kids what to do with them, how to cook them, which end to eat, which part to throw in the compost bin. And the kids begin to go home and say, I just tried beets for the first time. Can we buy them? And then, of course, the price point is low enough. It's not asking for a piece of technology or a pair of new shoes. So if a kid comes home and says, can I try beets? Well, yeah. We're going to go try beets.
I love it.
It has the effect on both ends of the spectrum, yeah.
So in a non-COVID world, talk a little bit about how this program works, because we will be back to something somehow someday. And then talk about how you, it's my least favorite word since March, pivoted, and how you have pivoted since everything went sideways. But pre-COVID and post, hopefully post-COVID, how does this program work? And then how have you switched things up?
Sure. So our normal model is to go into these Title I schools, which is a low-income school, and provide cooking and nutrition education. So the kids are working hands-on with little plastic knives and cooking tools, and they are making anything from a broccoli potato taco recipe to a tostada. And they love, love, love tasting new foods and getting hands-on and cooking. And so, of course, when COVID hit, we're taking a little bit of that joy away from these kids by not being able to be with them and share that. So we thought, what if we package up our recipe kits? They've already learned how to make the recipes and enable them to be able to make those at home with their families. And so alongside the school lunch distribution, we go from school to school and we pass out recipe kits. So they have all the fresh, healthy ingredients to make a recipe for four people. And inside we also have like an activity sheet and crayons so that the kids can continue their food literacy because we know it's one of their favorite classes. Mm-hmm. And we get the cutest little notes back and emails. We even have a little popcorn contest where if the kids send in photos and tell us about how they're cooking their recipe, they can win a popcorn popper, and then we deliver it to them. So we've been trying to stay in touch as much as we can with our families. We definitely miss our kids. One thing that when we return to in-person that we're really looking forward to is the school district is building us a cooking school.
Wow.
And this is going to actually build further resilience with our kids because we'll have access to cold storage, a commercial kitchen. We'll be able to feed more people, but the community will be able to help us do that and build resilience. And we'll also be able to grow food. So we're really looking forward to having that space. Nature is also supposed to really heal in times of stress. And so we're looking forward to having that up and running by next year. So things are... We haven't stopped. We haven't taken a breath, and we just keep moving forward because especially COVID has highlighted, COVID is hitting folks the hardest who have these chronic diseases. Mm. Those are the folks who are ending up in the emergency rooms, and it's something that we're not talking enough about in America, is the adverse long-term effects and now the threat to life that a poor diet has on our health. It is so critical that we reach these kids before this is a problem, set them up with healthy habits for a healthy future, and hopefully we can reverse this because half of Americans are suffering from poor diet-related diseases.
If you're just joining me, my guest is Amber Stott. She is the CEO and Chief Food Genius at the Food Literacy Center. Amber, what are the ages of the kids you work with? And talk about what your programs pre-COVID and, gosh darn it, during COVID mean to the parents of the kids you work with.
Yeah, we are working largely with elementary kids, although we also have started training moms, and we've also started training teens. So there's no one we are not trying to reach with this food literacy education. But largely we target elementary kids because they haven't developed any habits yet. So we want to get them to have these healthy habits from the very start because then they'll stick for the rest of their lives. And the parents respond really positively. In fact, right now we're doing some delivery of recipe boxes directly to the homes of some of our families that don't have transportation. And we did a survey with them saying, are you eating the vegetables that we're giving you? We're giving you a lot of vegetables. Do you, do you want us to give you less? Can you use them all? And they were like, not only do we like them, but can we have more?
Oh,
and also,
yay.
Can we have a cutting board and a knife so that we can do better things with them? And we were like, oh my gosh.
Oh man. That's awesome.
Music to our ears.
So at any given time, how many kids and families are you working with?
It varies. So one of our programs, we're delivering directly to our families' homes, and we're reaching 98 kids in 30 families. And then our recipe box distribution, we're reaching, there are four meals per box, and so we're delivering about 100 of those a week. So we're getting out about 400 meals a week. And, we'll continue that and hopefully even scale up a little as fall hits, because we know that nutrition and food insecurity is only continuing to go up as unemployment and the recession really grab hold. So,
right.
So yeah.
That you teach the kids, again, I love that you work with younger kids who don't have preconceived notions about food and are open to trying things. Talk about don't yuck my yum, one of my absolute favorite statements ever, ever, ever. Terms.
Yeah. And so what we're trying to do is get kids to consume a vegetable. Well, that's behavior change, but you can't get someone to change their behavior until you change both their knowledge and their attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And that attitude is the thing in America that we have to chip away at the hardest. So one of our rules in the food literacy classroom is don't yuck my yum. And this really helps us get past that attitude. So kids often respond by saying, ew and gross to a new food that they've never seen before. But we say to them, you know, that might be your neighbor's very favorite thing, and we don't want to hurt anyone's feelings, so don't yuck my yum.
I love
and
it.
We see it open kids' minds to, oh, if somebody else likes that, maybe I'll like it too. And it's very quick how much they change their attitude and how quickly.
I love it. Okay, so as we speak in August, September is Food Literacy Month. COVID or not, it is Food Literacy Month. So again, pre-COVID, how was that observed and celebrated, and how are things going to look in September? And by the way, you coined the term food literacy, which is now quite common, but that's an Amber Stott-ism, correct?
Yeah, yep, it is. And in 2012, I worked with the California legislature to declare the month of September as Food Literacy Month in the state of California. And we celebrate it by raising awareness. And a really fun way that we do that is we hold this Veggie of the Year contest, and we let kids vote on their favorite veggie, but we try to get the whole community involved because they need awareness too. So we actually work with local chefs, and in pre-COVID days, we would go into the schools with these chefs, and the chefs would prepare a bite with those veggies, and then the kids would taste it, and that's how they would vote. This year, we're not going to be able to interact directly with the kids, so we're going to box up all the Veggie of the Year vegetable contestants, and we're going to send kids home with a big box of veggies, and they'll taste those veggies and vote. And then meanwhile, we still want the chefs to show our community what they can do with these veggies. So each chef that's representing one of those vegetables is going to do an online cooking demo, one a week, so that the community can learn right along with our kids, what the heck do you do with an eggplant? And the community actually gets the first opportunity to help us narrow the veggie contestants. In the first week of September, we post like 10 different vegetables on our Facebook page, and we let the community vote and narrow it down to the top five. And then that top five are the vegetables that will go home with our kids for the voting.
I
so
love
it's
it.
A lot of fun.
And what's interesting is I know that some of the vegetables are really unique, like cactus and, you know, to your point, eggplant. But also some of the ones that in the past that you sort of take for granted, I'm not going to say the lowly carrot, but carrots have also been in the running because of the amazing things that chefs do with something that you just kind of take for granted. So it's really across the board unique, maybe not as well-known vegetables, and your everyday representatives, right?
Absolutely. And it's really fun to watch, you know, something like cauliflower compete against beet. And you would think the kids might choose cauliflower.
You would think.
Beets win, you know, so it's really fun to watch that kind of thing happen and see these kids who are true food adventurers voting on veggies of the year that parents would probably never perceive that their kids would even eat.
That is so awesome. My guest is Amber Stott. She's the CEO and chief food genius at the Food Literacy Center. Amber, like all nonprofit organizations, fundraising is a challenge during these times when you need the money possibly more than ever, and you need to get really, really creative. And you need to what you do is going to be needed by more people as things continue along the path that they're on. I love your fundraisers, and I'm probably going to participate. Talk about your virtual dumpling class fundraiser. How fun is that?
Yeah, we're really excited. Lisa Lin is a local food blogger, and she has a global following, and she is an amazing cook, and she's going to show us. She cooks a lot of her mom's traditional Chinese recipes, so she's going to show us how to make dumplings from scratch, and it's a really affordable price point. She gives you the ingredient list in advance, and then you go purchase those ingredients and then go home and follow along with her and cook these dumplings. So I'm really looking forward to learning this.
And when is that? That is in that's in August, like in a couple weeks?
It is, yeah. Yes. And you can find that info on our website at foodliteracycenter.org/events.
Well, I'm one of those people who hasn't learned a single new skill since this all happened in March, so maybe I can finally step up my game in August. And then you've got a virtual cheese board design class and wine tasting fundraiser. Can't even stand myself. Talk about that one.
Yeah, this is another fun one, and this one's going to be hosted by one of our board members, Erin Alderson. She's also a local food blogger with an international following, and she's going to show us how to use ingredients that we already might have on hand. She'll also provide that ingredient list in advance, and we'll learn how to make a beautiful cheese board that we could end up displaying and have a little, you know, backyard party with our
family.
Yeah.
That's a talent and a skill. So those are great ways to fundraise. On your website, there's a paragraph called Building Resilience. We're kind of shifting gears here. And it says, our approach to education is to use trauma-informed food literacy. That's a fancy way of saying that we teach in a manner that takes our kids' emotional needs into consideration. Expand on that a little bit, because that's a pretty heavy-duty statement.
Yeah. So I mentioned that the children we served are in food deserts, and you can imagine the kinds of experiences they have had, either from, just the things that come with poverty, being food insecure alone. Imagine not being able to wake up and know that you have food on any given day, the kinds of trauma that over time that builds up, the kinds of stress. And then also think about the issues of race that we're facing as a nation and living with those. And so these small kinds of traumas that build up, our kids face some pretty heavy stuff, and they carry it. And there's data and research now that it actually affects our biology when we have this kind of trauma. And it can then show up later in adulthood and affect our health. And so there's all kinds of research on this. In fact, California's very first Surgeon General, she has a degree and background in this specific research. And so what we do at Food Literacy Center is we just try to hold an understanding of knowing the experiences that our kids have lived with, and knowing that when they throw a temper tantrum in our class or they are pouty, understanding the hard place that is coming from and knowing that we can help them build resilience. And building resilience means that when you have a hard day, you know how to get yourself up over that hard time. And if you don't have role models that help you through that, you won't build those skills. And then that affects you later in life, and, you know, being able to sit through your classes or, you know, stand up to your boss in a professional way, right? Mm-hmm. So we show up with joy. And one of our kids actually said to another teacher, the thing I like about food literacy is that they're always there for us.
Oh.
And that tells you something about how important this is, that we hold that space for them, for the emotion that they're having, but we don't dismiss it and we don't kick them out of class. We instead help them process through that by changing the behavior and saying, I understand you're having a bad day. You know, do you want to try chopping carrots today? I understand you're having a bad day. Do you want to give me a thumbs up or a thumbs down about how you're feeling? And just being able to connect and say, oh yeah, I am feeling crummy today. They're learning to identify how they're feeling, express it in a healthy way, And then also take the step to, oh, yes, I do want to participate. I would feel better if I could chop that carrot. So just being able to have some teaching techniques to help our kids build that resilience that we know is going to put them on a healthy path in their future.
That's awesome. And in the fall, we got about a minute and a half here, but you're hoping to see some of your kids outdoors as fall nears, yes?
We are, yeah. We are exploring all the ways that we can do some very small, you know, 6 to 10 kid classes, you know, like a plant, parts of a plant scavenger hunt, you know, go and find a leaf in the schoolyard, go and find a stem. So we want to see what kinds of short, interactive ways we can get our kids back outside. We know this is very healing for mental health, and we know that mental health is tied to our physical health as well. So we do want to get our kids, you know, outside and engage with them. We just know that that's really important to keeping them moving forward and building that resilience.
If people are listening, how can they help?
We always need donations and support. Everything that we do is provided for free. We never, ever charge the school or the families. And so donations can be given at foodliteracycenter.org.
You are the best. Do you need physical volunteers, or donations are usually the best way to go?
Donations are best right now because of physical distancing,
right.
we are trying to limit the number of volunteers. We typically do have tons of volunteers, but right now we're limiting it. And we're, you know, you can still fill out a volunteer application on our website. You never know when a slot might open. And of course, as things return to, you know, having more people in a space, we're definitely going to need volunteers again.
Amber Stott, CEO and Chief Food Genius of the Food Literacy Center. Always great talking to you, and thanks for what you do.
Thank you so much for having me.